Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist.
Well, Miles, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by one of the very faces on Mount Zeitmore, a hilarious and brilliant producer, TV writer. You know him from the Yo, Is This Racist podcast. It's Andrew T.
Andrew T.
Solidarity.
Forever.
Solidarity. Welcome, man.
I've been having trouble with some of the union songs, man. It's a little, the union song canon got a little white, and then briefly I was like playing like Communist Party Chinese music on my hype up to this picket line.
Okay,
got a little weird too. lot of killing motherfuckers in those songs.
Wow. you could sing like Bella Ciao, you know, there's like that one good old yarn from the Italians. That anti-fascist anthem.
You know what? Yeah, there's a bunch of that, you know, and there's probably a bunch of stuff in Spanish that's my fault that I went to Chinese communism.
Hey, you go with what you know first, you know.
So is everybody up there singing "Rich Men North of Richmond"? The Oliver.
Yeah, that was more of a beginning of the strike thing. I think that was when we were all like trying to be serious. I think what it was we were trying to impress the Teamsters. Like, we're cool.
Right.
We're down.
Right.
They're like, and now it's nice now try. It's just kind of
now you've all thrown out your backs, just picking up the signs. And
God. It's been a good strike. Haven't seen you guys in a minute, but you know, strike it.
Yeah. I mean, that's why we wanted to have you on, because just it's constantly changing. And I think also our understanding of the industry, I think, especially for like people outside of California, outside of LA, have like a very a perspective on what's happening that is not fully formed. And I think, you know, the purpose of today is to really like roll our sleeves up, give some perspective and talk about like what's at stake here truly, because we definitely got a good intro when Adam Conover came on. And now that like things are slowly developing, we know a little bit more, we kind of wanted to come back because this affects like 80% of our listeners' favorite guests. Like, most of y'all realize all the comedians that we have on, a lot of them have spent time in writers' rooms, because that's they ain't, like Marcella said, she's like, it ain't happening, you're not getting it from stand-up. So I get why all the homies end up going to write, because that's a way to carve out a life for yourself. So anyway, looking forward to talking about.
I get it. You guys have eaten at California Pizza Kitchen. You think you understand what this strike is all about.
Yeah. I mean,
you've had In-N-Out right? You get it.
Now you got AMC PK, right? You could mesh those
AMC
up.
AMC PK. Oh, yeah, we should. Yeah. AMC PK. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. We'll work on it.
Are you sounding that out just to make sure?
Are the letters in? See where the RH comes in. But.
Oh.
Yeah. That's tough. That's tougher.
It's a tough one.
AMRCPK.
There we go.
Yeah, it doesn't work. Doesn't
we
work.
Need a it's bigger fine. Room? We need a bigger room to
yeah.
work out that.
Yeah,
one.
You know yeah. what? If we had enough minds to do this,
yeah.
we could come could up.
Give
with
you
it.
The proper product. Sorry about that.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
What is something from your search history?
Okay, well, yesterday I was Googling The Walking Dead and I kind of went down like a rabbit hole because I fell off of the show and I used to love the comics and I was like, oh, do I like get back into this? But now I see that there are like 4 spinoff shows that I just didn't watch, and the show ended in its 11th season. I was like, there's just no way I'm going to be able to do it. There's now like a Star Trek amount right. of Walking Dead. That I'm just never gonna, I probably never will get catch back up. But I was just kind of seeing what each one of them was. So a lot of the searches is just like the various like Wikipedia entries for each show.
Right.
And then yeah. like, why does that person have a strange name? And I was like, oh, I've seen them in this and this and this or whatever. And so I kind of just went down a Walking Dead rabbit hole was the most recent.
How many recent Googling. Walking, like how many, there's like Fear the Walking Dead,
There's
right?
Fear the Walking Dead. There's Dead City, which is a sequel to The Walking Dead. Okay. There's the Daryl Dixon show that's also a sequel.
There's a prequel, isn't there?
There's what's it called? Oh shoot, let me pull it up. Let
Dude,
me pull
Tales
them up.
Of the Walking Dead, The Walking Dead World Beyond.
Yes, yeah, that one is like story set in the future or something. And then there's a new one coming out that brings back Rick Grimes and Michonne, and that one I believe is called The People Who Live or something like that.
Oh my god!
Yeah, it's or The Ones Who Live is coming in 2024. Because they were going to, wow. Andrew Lincoln left the show and they were going to do these movies with him as Rick Grimes. And he was going to be like a blockbuster, like action hero, basically.
Uh-huh.
And they just never did that. They just like never did. So they took him out of the show. He's like the best guy there. And he's like the lead of the comic book series, too. And yeah. they took him out of the show. They're like, we got to put him in movies.
Yeah.
And then they just never did it. And now they're bringing him back for a spinoff series after the show has ended.
Weird. What? It's yeah. like the character left TV to pursue a film career.
Exactly. Yeah,
which, like, usually it's like the actor, yeah. like Clooney leaves ER to pursue a film career. You yeah. rarely yeah. see like the character and it like it fails to launch.
Yeah.
Like, oh. But
there's just too many now. And I am interested in catching up, but I just don't know if I'll do all that.
Yeah. When did you yeah. like what is there a season that they consider like the peak? Because I stopped watching after Frank Darabont was like off it. I was like, ah.
I stuck
was
only with there it for a while. I actually probably did. I was thinking about this yesterday and I was like, when did I stop watching it? Like, because there was a consensus or at least I thought I was like, the show has kind of fallen off, but I'm still watching it. Like, I kind of stick with shows even if I don't love it.
Same.
Like, I watched all of Dexter. Like, I've seen every Dexter.
Wow. Yeah.
Are you going to watch? Because that's a expanded television universe that's coming, right?
I can't watch. Oh, did you watch the new shit, too?
I watched the new one, too. Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Did they make amends for just the... I mean, once it ended, I was like, all right, yeah, fuck you, too.
Yeah.
Thanks for nothing.
I thought the new thing, I can't remember what it was called. I thought it was pretty good compared to the final season of how it ended,
right.
But I don't think they could ever capture the heights of the John Lithgow season. Like,
oh,
that was
yeah,
just
yeah,
like
yeah.
such, that was like lightning in a bottle. The show was not that good before
no.
that and never as good after that. Like, it
Especially
was kind of just like a lucky strike kind of.
When Edward yeah. James almost was a fucking figment of
yeah.
motherfuckers,
yeah.
I was like, you really went that deep in the season to be like, sorry, y'all, this was just some fake shit. This
yeah.
is a figment of motherfuckers. I was like, this is terrible, right? Anyway,
it's
so
bad,
when did Walking Dead peak? Just so I know when to go up to.
I feel like when Negan comes, when Jeffrey Dean Morgan comes into the series, that's like, it's huge in the comics too. Like, he's such a presence and he's such a like dominant figure in the series, and he's such like a like just a top villain, I think.
Yeah.
That like, and Jeffrey Dean Morgan's performance in it is so, so great that it I think it elevated it to quite a bit, because also like you're used to the core group at that point, and right. You're like, oh shit, now he's in here and he's gonna, you know, if you're familiar with the comics, start getting some RBIs. But he's
the baseball bat guy.
Yeah, he's a big baseball bat guy, let's say. Uh-huh. And let's say he hits dingers, this guy.
Uh-huh.
But
okay.
He does it, and then he's around for a little bit, but then they like, I heard they like make him good. And like, I don't remember if the comics ever made him good, but then, you know, I stuck through it with until Andrew Lincoln left. I was like, you know what? I think we're good here. This is fine. I think I'm done. Thanks, though. And that was probably like season 6, season 7 or something. And it went like 5 more seasons. Like,
oh, shit. Okay. Yeah. Well, good to know. It's round 6.
Yeah.
When I get off.
Are they all like kind of the same quality? Like that, because it seems like that's the impression I get. Like The Walking Dead and then like Dead City and.
Yeah.
The spinoff shows also seem to be like all named by somebody who was like trying to come up with it. Like he had 15 minutes to come up with the names of every series
Red Machete
for the next 20
something.
Years.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, okay, I'm just going to rapid fire some off. Just like, there's, of course,
the ones who live.
Yeah. Which sounds like a daytime soap. Like it doesn't sound like it's part of the Walking Dead universe.
Right. Or just like a plot description.
This is about the ones who live.
You could call it like the final girls or like, you know, No. It's just like they're the ones who like
the ones
lived
who live.
From the other part where the people
just
died.
A bunch of Harry Potters walking around.
Right.
But I think there, I haven't, I don't know anybody that watched the spinoffs and were like, these are as good. Like these are of similar quality.
Because
like the Frank Darabont season was kind of like its own thing because it was like pretty serious. And not that the other shows became like less serious or whatever, but they became pulpier, I think.
Sure.
Like his was more of a grounded take, and his like after that, it became just like a horror, like, you know, sort of just like blockbustery type of like show.
Yeah.
I was all about the art when it comes to zombie apocalypse.
It was cinema as compared to, you know, the MCU of the of the Walking Dead universe.
Dead City.
Yeah.
Welcome to Dead City.
Whoa.
Everybody in this city is dead.
Kenny, what's something you think is overrated?
Robots. Robots are overrated, dude. I was walking through Greenpoint in Brooklyn today, and they got a new coffee shop where a robot serves you coffee, and people are actually going in there and giving their money to a robot. And I don't understand why we're letting this happen. We just have to roundly reject this. There is no advantage to this other than the novelty. It's like insane.
Yeah.
Barista is a job that needs to exist in society. You know, like, what? Why? Why? There's coffee shops everywhere. Why would you ever go to the robot one? Maybe once to see it, sure. But this is like insane. Literally, human beings have been warning about this since the 50s, since before even the technology for this to happen. Philip K. Dick was like, nah, man, can't do it. And it's just been steady drumbeat of some of the smartest people on the planet being like, we shouldn't be doing this. And we can't help ourselves.
Right.
And
I just invented a thing. I'm quitting now. It's really bad. I'm going to go like live in a bunker now. Wasn't there that like Google AI person who was like, I thought maybe this was going to be bad in like 15 years. It turns out the next 3, I'm quitting. Good day to you all.
It's insane, man. And like who benefits? It isn't us. No one hearing this is in the tax bracket where this is good for you. This is just slave labor. They're making robots so they can replace human labor and have no overhead. And that's so obvious. And somehow we're just like, pretty cool. My DoorDash guy's a robot now. That's pretty cool.
My thing is like, I hate tipping. I just can't tip people. It's just disturbing when these people are with their hat in hand being like, can I get a tip with robots? Guess what? Yeah. Don't need to tip them. So I say, bring it on, you know?
And you can fuck each other in front of them.
That's true. No judgment.
Yeah, no judgment. Yeah. Even though there's no way that they have cameras present or anything like that. So, as we'll get into.
This looks really stupid, this robot. Like,
the robo barista?
Yeah. It's fucking like, I like to your point, Kenny, like, I get that you might pop in to be like, let me watch it make a cut. Like, I'll watch someone else buy it and then I'll just leave after the show versus like, I don't know, like the people, the way they're saying it's like advantageous is like the robots are consistent. Okay.
It's coffee, dog. Room for cream. You put everything else in it. What are we doing?
I've never had like a latte and I'm like, well, they really fucked up that steam, the milk on this one. The fuck's going on?
And this is also like, it's not like baristas are jobs for like people that are doing other things. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's not. Yeah, why are we taking these jobs?
Yeah, right.
This is like kids in college or fresh out or artists or whatever. And it's like, it's just so insane, man.
My coffee, my day's ruined. They forgot to put the water in my coffee today. Fucking cup of grounds. Yeah, pretty consistent. It's unfuck-upable, but yeah, it feels like it's a novelty thing that hopefully we'll get over soon. It can't be currently cost efficient, right? For them to do that, but maybe they're hoping that the novelty will just like bring in massive amounts of people.
Well, what's scary is you see the barista and you're like, oh, a harmless little robot. But then you see that the police already have robot cop dogs. And it's just like, we have to stop this. We have to stop it right now.
Yeah.
I am trying to be proactive. I got a sex robot, but I don't have sex with her. I just go down on her so I can create an ally. You know,
there you go.
When they uprise, you know, she'll be like, hey, he's one of the good ones. Leave him alone.
Yeah. His name is on the protective scrolls. This man eats. And you're like, all right, well, good to know.
What is something that you think is overrated?
Marriage.
Marriage.
Go on.
I'm just getting out of, I was with my ex for 12 years. We were married for 6.
Wow.
And don't do it. screw the Supreme Court for even allowing gay marriage. You got me trapped. You got me. I'm stuck.
And wait, so now, like, for you personally, you're like, it's not for me. Is it the experience overall that you realize that? Or, I mean, I hate to be Oprah here, but, or was it with this specific relationship that put you up? Do you see yourself finding somebody that you could potentially shack up with again?
You know, my attorney is like, I give you a year and a half and you're going to be coming to me with your next marriage, but we're going to put together a good prenup. So I guess it's, I really needed, I guess what's underrated is prenups.
There you go.
Things can change, huh? Things can change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see. That. But yeah. So if you didn't know, I'm a homosexual.
I gathered.
So just wanted to clear the air. So before
you said the Supreme Court. Yeah. Until you said the Supreme Court thing, I was like, okay. Don't.
Yeah. Okay. Now it's fair. Okay. Now it's fair.
Got it. Good. Yeah. We'll not make any assumptions. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So is that your underrated prenups? Underrated?
Yeah. I guess so. I'm just learning that now. Prenups and hand jobs.
Oh, why hand
prenups
jobs?
And hand jobs? That's a good like album title.
That maybe that's my next tour.
Yeah, wow.
Nursing plus prenups and hand jobs.
Exactly. Just
It's that's perfect.
The nursing the prenups and hand jobs tour. Wait, why is a hand job underrated?
Well, because I think a lot of people, they just want to go straight to sex.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's not, there's other things you could do.
Yeah.
Just as fun.
We're good with these things as humans.
Honestly.
Kind of one of our perfect. Defining
not many
features.
Species on Earth got these thumbs that can even enable the proper type of job with the
hand. It's like hand jobs can be a home run. It can be third base. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I feel like a hand job snob. Like I've always viewed it as something I could do myself. So I feel less like, I'm like, hey, nobody knows
I'm gay, so I guess, you know, it's like they know what they're doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe so, that's why. Yeah. Okay. Why. Well,
Just, you know, explore.
I'm just going around, I'm like cruising now. I'm looking for a good hand job. You know, it's like a solid one. You know,
third base hand job.
Yeah, just a solid hand job. Because I've been getting a lot of these fucking minor league hand jobs.
I don't know how guys, like with the girls with the long nails that, you know, that's got to be.
Oh, yeah, never.
Can't be as good.
Yeah, I don't think I've actually.
My hand jobs rarely involve nails. Am I doing it wrong?
To each their own, Jack. To each their own.
Okay. Yeah.
And maybe you'll be visiting Nurse Blake at some point. If that goes left.
Well, I'll do it.
We have a lot to learn.
I could do a full assessment.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. I'll send you some pictures later. We'll go from there. All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back to talk about some news.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. And this is actually going to be a full Reese's show. I guess there's climate change news, but Miles was checking out the new Reese's lineup and seeing
Reese's cream. Have you had Reese's creamy?
No.
Versus Reese's crunchy?
Fuck out of here.
What? Wow.
Crunchy, I could fuck with. I could give that a whirl.
They did one where they put the creamy? Reese's cereal puffs in it.
Oh, okay. Creamy isn't like creamy too. Peanut
butter. No, that's a different one. Yeah, the one is creamy peanut butter versus crunchy peanut butter.
I thought it was like a cream. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. God. For your coffee.
Can I comment on the cereal real quick?
Yeah.
Please. I always felt like as a person of color, I always thought that cereal was exclusively marketed to people of color and because there's never white children in the commercials.
Yeah, that's true.
I was like, what is going on here? This is just a cereal for us?
The puffs are like really on point in terms of skin tone. Like these are real skin tones.
Yeah, you know absolutely. I mean? Yeah, so
I quite literally see myself in the cereal. Yeah. So in that sense, it was drawing me like a moth to the flame.
Exactly. Yeah, I was like, this cereal is not for white children.
I know. I think those commercials really were. They're like, you ain't cool enough to eat this shit, white kids.
Go back to your tricks.
Yeah, exactly. Because this shit definitely ain't for kids.
Yeah.
It ain't for this mark for ass kids man. Like you. Yeah, because one was like, wasn't it like a wrap in one?
Yeah, Reese's Puff, Reese's Puff, peanut butter chocolate flavor.
Oh, man. I didn't know. I missed these. Well, I think I was too old to have been around when this was being. I think they were like made when I was like Yeah, this I was like listening to radio ads, okay. Like the Geritol radio hour. I think these hit when I was like in middle school, so I wasn't like watching Saturday morning cartoons anymore.
Yeah, see?
Oh, there's the one white homie. There was the one white homie with the two black guys.
They gave him, yeah, they invited him.
But like very, but he plays a very like tertiary role in it. Because like the main action between the two black guys were like, yeah, this shit is good.
Look, I'm going to go ahead and say it. He's lucky to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then like afterwards, like, don't think you can start using the N-word, Brad.
Yeah, just because you like the cereal.
Okay. You were just part of the commercial. Yeah. And then this one too. Yeah, it's true. I mean, look, Reese's, maybe they've been a civil rights leader this whole time.
And you know what? That's why I'll always vow to take at least one bite of any Reese's cup I see, even if I don't like it.
There you go.
And that's why neoliberalism works. Yeah, you know? It's because there's money being spent to change hearts and minds via Reese's commercials.
Right, exactly. Same way I'll eat Little Caesars because the owner paid for Rosa Parks' rent.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's right.
Like, all right, I see you. I salute you. Salute the champions. But anyway, good news. Shall we move on to?
Yeah, let's talk about some good news.
So despite the ongoing tragedy in Maui, it seems like we have like an actual bit of good news on the climate front. So this judge in Montana ruled in favor of a group of young plaintiffs, like between ages like 5 and up to like around 22 or 21, that sued the state basically to change the state's laws, underscoring their right to live in a, you know, fucking healthy world. They basically argued that their constitutional rights were being trampled on, because the state like actually legally mandates a policy that, prioritizes fossil fuel use and also like the development of fossil fuel use. So like it's just very like, yeah, it's on our books. We love fucking gasoline and dino juice.
Right.
And there's also a part of those like mandates that actually make the state literally ignore the impact of fossil fuel use and greenhouse gas emissions. They're like, don't even look at that shit. It's our policy in the state of Montana. So basically they went full earth fuck, and the plaintiffs argued that the Montana Constitution grants them the right to a clean and healthful environment. Also like, you know, dignity, health and safety, happiness, equal protection under the law. And they're saying this shit, if you're mandating this kind of nonsense, that's violating our constitutional right.
Yeah.
And the judge heard enough, ruled in their favor, and has now enjoined the state from implementing these laws in the future. So it's done. So a very small thing, but many people are pointing to the fact that this is really significant.
Yeah.
And like a lot of policy people see this as a new tool to fight back, because when all the facts and science and like are presented along with the impacts on the future generations, there seems to be a consensus that this amounts to a true constitutional violation that has to be considered.
Yeah. Like it should be against the law for them to poison the future.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just because like I think it's abstract where it's like, well, you can't dump radioactive waste by a school. Like it's the same thing where it's like, well, we're not seeing it now, so shit's just going in the air that who knows what impact that has. And now that they're articulating it, it's really
just pointing out that the current laws actually like mandate that you do destroy the earth.
Yeah.
I think it's an easy one. It was probably the easiest one to go for, because you're like, they're literally saying ignore the fucking science here.
Yeah.
Like at our detriment. Like, so what gives?
Something I like about this story is that it includes that the ages of the plaintiffs were 5 to 22. Like it's like making it possible that it was the 5-year-old that was like, we got to do something about this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
Hey, get off your fucking PlayStation. Man. I got something to say. Yeah. I'm 5 years old and I'm looking at my Outlook and I'm feeling fucked over.
Yeah.
Y'all.
Yeah. And then they're like, okay, let him cook. He's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. Does he need a nap? No, he's being really serious. Okay.
He just had one. That's why he's so energetic right now.
Yeah, he was arguing in front of the judge.
Yeah. Right.
Your Honor. Like, yeah.
My Honor. Right, exactly. They turned to W's. Climate change.
Climate change.
But there does seem to be like something inherent. Like, I don't know. This is definitely anecdotal, but it feels like young children are just like, yeah, no, I'm like a vegetarian because why wouldn't I be? Are you fucking crazy? It's like, you're 6. What are you talking about? But they're just, it seems like through just living in a world that is like completely deranged and completely fucking the future. That,
yeah.
Like the message is getting to them despite the best efforts of kind of the mainstream media.
Yeah, I don't know how a little kid could look around now and be like, this seems fine. Like, it's like everything is just good. So markedly bad that like kids today have to be like, what, 10 years left? I'll be 16. Let's see if I can try to fix this thing.
Like, it's weird too, like how my like, I used to be like, man, these young kids don't know. We was out here on bicycles and shit, pre-computer, man. Shit was, you could get, you know, it was fucking beautiful.
Yeah, you used to go around to playgrounds and say that shit.
Just, yeah.
Y'all don't fucking know. We push a kid over now. It's my turn on the swing.
Yeah.
but then, like, now I'm truly like, damn, these kids aren't going to know some of the things. Like, I look at my own little baby and I'm like, this, I don't even know what the fuck his world is going to look like compared to the shit that I had. And I'm like, damn, like, that's kind of an L. And now you realize, you know, this is truly like, this is the real fight that has to, that is taking place, because this isn't the only place where lawsuits like this are happening.
Yeah.
There's one in Hawaii, like, and there are other states, because again, this seems like a pretty good tool to use to try and counteract dino juice addiction.
Yeah. it feels, and it, again, like as we talked about in our episode about Ministry for the Future, like we are in a unique position being inside the United States. Like we're in the belly of the beast, and like other countries are, you know, already kind of working with the new reality and just like enacting policies. But the U.S. is still in this bizarre cognitive dissonance spiral.
Yeah.
And then we're like, why is everyone so unhappy? And it's like, well, because like there's a very clear reality that everyone's having to just like lock out and ignore to like get through their day to day lives.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not good for you. It can't be good for you.
No, no. Yeah, the ocean's boiling in Florida. Like people are just like, I just won't think about that. Like,
<"Wow." laughs> I'll just think about how I got third degree burns from walking on the sidewalk. Yeah. It's so hot outside.
Kidding me, dude? We're going hot tubbing in the ocean. It's fucking tight.
It's so cool.
Just can't stand for more than 10 minutes or else
your heart will stop.
Yeah, you'll actually cook from the inside. Yeah, so you're like, you only want to get in there for just a little bit.
Yeah, you're not on blood thinners, are you?
We need your blood thick in there.
Yeah.
You know that metaphor about like the frog and the boiling water? Like that's actually not a metaphor anymore.
Look at all these frogs. The reality. That are cooked.
You need to get the fuck out of there now. Well, speaking of Florida, let's check in down there real quick. Mm-hmm. Ron DeSantis. This is like I'm enjoying Ron DeSantis's campaign. I did not think I would heading in, but man, he is bad at this.
So
there's not a true like note. He has yet to hit like a note that wasn't just like
completely off like, and sour.
Just sour and like false and completely like incapable of connecting with humans in any way.
And then like every headline that comes out every week is some version of like people like Ron DeSantis till they fucking meet him.
Right. You know, like what must this be doing to his
so many permutations self-esteem. Of that. Another one's like, is Ron DeSantis's biggest problem Ron DeSantis?
What's so funny, cause like I feel like a lot of these guys come out of the woodwork, like even like you know, they start talking, they start campaigning, and then they just like reveal themselves to be the biggest freaks on earth. Like a couple years ago when I was blessed to not know who Ted Cruz was, and then he shows up and then he's just like the biggest dweeb on planet earth. It's like, this guy fucking sucks. Like, he's like not even like not that like his policies would be better if he was cool, but like he can't even pretend to be like a normal man.
Well, yeah, he's just like, he has like every terrible flaw. Like he's a coward, like on top of being like a racist and like violently ignorant, is like he doesn't stand for any, not even his own wife. You're like, are you?
He ate a booger.
Yeah. So, you know, Ron DeSantis now, he's like trying to fucking right the ship. Like he's trying to be like, the optics are so bad around everything I do. Like I need fucking help. And he recently proclaimed that he's moved on from his feud with Disney, which is one of the central conflicts that has made him look like the most petulant asshole out there.
Yeah.
And so again, just to break it down again, if you recall, Disney decided to speak up way too late in the game when DeSantis decided to roll out his Don't Say Gay bill. And people were like, Disney's like, this is bad. And people were like, thank you. It was weeks late, but thank you for saying something. this upset Rob, and he decided to nullify Disney's like autonomous zone in Orlando and install his own puppet board. And there's all this like legal fucking maneuvering. This led Disney to file a lawsuit against DeSantis and the state for what they described as, quote, a targeted campaign of government retaliation. True. And this led to just a ton of people roasting him. Like, even Donald Trump's like, oh, you got in a fight with Mickey Mouse and you got humiliated. And like, no, everyone was just fucking roasting his ass. And now his latest quotes about it, he's like trying to act like this whole thing wasn't an L the whole time. This is the last thing he just said on CNBC. We've basically moved on. They're suing the state of Florida and they're going to lose that lawsuit. So what I would say is drop the lawsuit. So yes. All we want to do is treat everybody the same and let's move forward. I'm totally fine with that, but I'm not fine with giving extraordinary privileges, you know, to one special company at the exclusion of everybody else. This guy really just pulled the middle school, like,
I'm winning this fight, so you might as well just walk away.
He's Tim Robinson in the opening sketch of season 3. When I start to lose, I look at my phone.
Like, truly, it really doesn't feel like we're, like, in middle school, like, kids, like, talking shit, then someone claps back and makes them look like an absolute fool, and then they go, I'm over it, actually, like, I wasn't even happy, like, this wasn't even a fight anyway.
Yeah.
It's
right.
Like, come on, Rob. Fuck it's, right off.
It's impressive, like, I've just, that we've gotten to a place where this was, like, the great hope for defeating Donald Trump, and he's so bad. He can't make a move that doesn't make him look like absolute shit.
Yeah. He's just a device, as Chris Crofton would say. You know what I mean? Like, he just kind of goes where, like, the shitty wind blows and he has no real thought. And, like, so he's just trying to, like, he's just grasping at a ton of shit. And
yeah. He's like Sideshow Bob stepping on rakes, but, like, as a guy.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take another quick break and we'll come back and talk about some pop culture. We'll be right back.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. It sounds like there's an incentive for not even like acknowledging a hit show. And I know that's also like always been a traditional, like, you know, thing that people said about the entertainment industry, right? Like the first Indiana Jones movie, like, is still, like, according to the studio that made it, like, not profitable, you know, like shit, sure, like that, right, where it's right, like creative bookkeeping to keep people from participating. But it does feel like there is like, we don't even know when a show is a hit anymore. And yes, like, it's just right, like they dumped so much content, so yeah, many like shows on the, like, on their streaming networks without like even trying to promote when like one of them was a hit. It was just all, yeah, like invisible. And it's like all these things that supposedly millions and millions of people are watching and are entering, like, should be entering our, like, cultural, like, bloodstream. And, like, these are the ideas, yeah, that are, like, affecting the zeitgeist, and they're just, like, completely invisible. Do you think that's connected to the streamers just being so kind of guarded about letting their data, yeah, out?
Well, one is they might simply be, I'll say, you know, using creative statistics.
Yeah, I'll
about
say straight,
like,
up bullshitting.
Right.
Yeah. The performance, like, of things.
Like, that's certainly a possibility. But the other thing is, yeah, has been, like, their model is, like, so driven by people who apparently don't like or watch TV or understand how culture works at all.
Sure.
Like, down,
yeah,
to the
Wall
binging.
Street, right?
Yeah, it's Wall Street and Silicon Valley's influence. Like, you can see that happening. Because it's not like there aren't things that can happen, right? Even like on the streamers, like a Squid Game, or like, you know, just whatever, like
jury duty.
Yeah, like, yeah, things can break through and make a cultural impact. But I think it is because these people, essentially what their business model is, and you can tell, sorry, this is all my own speculation, I should say, is like you watch them trying to feed this like concept of quote content, like you see it in like HBO, right, Max, like David Zaslav just thinks of everything as content. Like, he's like House Hunters and Game of Thrones is equally,
yeah,
like
the same
equally
level,
a creative,
right,
endeavor. Yeah, like that is like very important to their worldview. It's just like minutes to eyeballs and fill in tape, essentially. So that I think is also why like they don't. Like, they seem to have an interest in devaluing the business model. And I will just throw this out there. It if you look at the way Silicon Valley has done things to other industries, I think Uber is a great example, or like rideshares in general. Like, they just go in, operate at a loss in an attempt to destroy the industry and create some kind of monopoly, which is arguably what Netflix is doing. And then, you know, either jacking up the prices or just sort of leaving the industry to like fucking deal with the cratered pieces and society.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know. So that, it just seems like Netflix essentially. So the other upshot of all this is that, like, because we, like, streamers play much fewer residuals off of, like, because we say so data, Netflix and Netflix, you know, or the streamers having like pioneered this practice of mini rooms, which is like, again, what I went through with 90s Show, like hiring much fewer people, asking them to do much more work and doing it for a shorter period of time. We like, they're essentially just begging to be able to operate at a lower cost, which is like, hey, maybe you just don't get to, if you're not smart enough to make money, like from television,
yeah,
like America's greatest import or export, like the most powerful thing. Like, other countries realize this. Like, fucking China understands that it's important to have, like, they obviously want to screw their workers too, but they at least understand it's important from a fucking, even if you're like a complete, like, you know, if you really don't care about this, like, just from a geopolitical standpoint. Like, right. Great Britain gets to continue to be a world power, you know, decades, edging on century, like, after their fucking little empire like crumbles, because people, because the Beatles is soft power that right. resonates, you know. This, we still have like my like dumb family who were literally victimized by the British being like, oh, sad when Queen Elizabeth dies. Like, that's power. That's like right, fucking yeah. power. And the fact that we appear to be like willing to give that away. So what I should say is, when I say give that away, is if the studios get what they want, that will, within, you know, 5, 10 something years, be the end of like working as a creative in Hollywood being a middle class sustainable existence. Like, it simply will be not possible. There will not be any staff writers. Like, essentially, that will then become, if you are a low-level television writer, it's sort of the equivalent of an internship. Like, essentially, like, only rich kids will be able to do it.
Right.
And, like, that, it just is basically then becoming a writer in Hollywood, is what I know most about, is a lottery ticket. You know, some of you will be able to make it on merit, but also luck. Some of you will be able to just outlast because you could run at a deficit for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years. Look, and it, by the way, is already like this, but it will make it worse. And if the like proposal to SAG goes through, that's like essentially trying to break the union from a pension perspective. If what they put on the table was there, like, they would end background acting as a profession, and that would completely decimate, sorry, I should say all this is as I understand it. Mm. Adam Conover probably has the actual notes version of this. But like, that just fucking ends acting as like a job. It ends acting as a job and turns it into a gig, which is just that's how we start to tell fewer interesting stories. Fewer new people will come through. We'll start to be doing the same thing over and over and over again. And we will start losing to creative people, creative countries. Like, it's just, it's very weird. No, it's not. But it is like sort of pathetic how like short term that all these folks,
the thinking is. Yeah.
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 Because, yeah, I mean, like, for the longest time, we were always like, how the fuck is Netflix a company? Because all I would be like, they're just deficit spending. And I was always asking like other people I knew who were like at the executive of them, like, what is their, like, I remember 10 or maybe like 8 years ago, I was like, what the fuck is their plan exactly?
Yeah.
And someone was like, they're probably hoping something like an Apple or a Google will just buy them at first.
Yeah.
Like, kind of like the thought. And it won't matter how much they've spent or burned up, because that would be the end goal. But then also, once Wall Street started rewarding that stock to say, oh, well, it's really not about the profits they're showing. It's about, look at their market share that they're devouring, and look at the potential. It's like Tesla, where it's like, don't look at like the facts and figures of the business, because it's dog shit. Think of like what this can do for the future. That's what you're buying into. And then once Netflix was like, oh, we just had a subscriber loss, Wall Street basically said, fuck all you guys for not being profitable. And then the reaction from the studios is, all right, well, now we got to cut shit. Now we got to do, people got to do less. We've got to do more with less, which is a theme that many people across the country are familiar with, no matter what industry you're in. It's like, hey, do more for less.
Yeah.
And we find ourselves in this position now where we're completely like in a way, inadvertently or very advertently, you're starting to see all of like the gains that were made in like equitable representation from like the kinds of creators that were getting shows and the kinds of people we saw being the faces on the screen. We're just regressing right back to the fucking status quo where it's like, I don't know, we don't have time to tell black stories or trans stories or Asian stories. We don't have time. Like, what's the new fucking IP we can just dust off and do another? They're going to do a spinoff of Nurse Jackie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck but are like, we doing? Like,
worse than the status quo, because it's the status quo, but also they don't pay people living wages.
Right.
Like, is the actual plan. Yeah, they like Wile E. Coyote themselves off a financial cliff. But the problem is they can bring all of us with them.
Right. And they're trying to do that.
Yeah, that is it appears to be the plan. And like, you know, I mean, it's just like this thing where I was like, again, watching how much like the same work is not being rewarded or being devalued. Oh, sorry, that was the other thing with the deficit spending thing, is like they also didn't really do a good job with the money they spent.
No.
Like, it's like because they just think, again, minutes of tape is the only metric that matters. Yeah. And yes. It's so bizarre how it, like, any fool could have told you that's not how culture works, except right. for these bozos. Like, yeah. they misunderstand how culture works. It's also this thing that, so the other sticking point in this strike has been AI. And, like, I, you know, the fact that, like, I understand AI can do, you know, we'll start to very quickly approach the old thing, you know, perfect replicas of whatever the fuck existed in the past.
Yeah. Right.
But, like, I think, like, these people, like, seem to misunderstand that culture is novel.
Right.
Like,
right.
They just do not get that, like, there is a need for something new.
Right.
And, like, their little plagiarism machine, you know, it maybe can, you know, through dint of, like, random remixing, essentially, like, come up with something that does yeah. appeal to a novel center of the culture's brains. But that's also because, like, some creative person picked that instance out of this pile of fucking 10,000 or 10 million. Like, yeah. it still required, like, a even, you know, so that's, like, every time anyone posts, like, AI art, it's like, oh, it's over for creatives. It's like, I don't, it you sucks. Know, far be it for me to defend the creativity of these AI fucking evangelists, but their misunderstanding that they picked the instance that was, like, pleasing to some center of their brain and shared with everyone,
right.
that the AI doesn't know that this one's better than the other fucking 9 million versions it made.
Right.
It still requires, like, a human sense of novelty and joy and wonder and experience to, like, have this mean something. I don't know. Maybe I'm sure there's some, like, AI person that disagrees with me on this. But
the
I'm
second
like,
that
I
it puts
know.
Out an actual flawless Seinfeld episode, then I think that we're still okay, you know. Well, but
yeah.
still doing it. But yeah. like the other thing
even
is.
Even that
like,
would be an old show. Like there are plenty of writers who could write a flawless Seinfeld episode right now. Like that's the thing that it misses is. And I agree that like it feels like they're already shading in this direction when you look at what they did with that spending, with all the money they spent, where it was like a lesser diminished like amount of production resources per show. And then you like look at all these streaming shows that are like they have these crazy high numbers, like this one article we'll link off to on the footnotes talks about the show The Night Agent being this huge like Netflix show, and they're talking to the showrunner who's like, yeah, but I'm like not being compensated like it's a hit Netflix show or a hit any show. And but like that show like doesn't really exist as far as like it came and went, and like I wasn't aware. I had it confused with The Bodyguard, I think, and the guy who plays it is like looks similar to The Bodyguard, and but it like I watched, you know, 15 minutes of it, and it feels like it could have been generated by an AI that had ingested every procedural like up to like for the past 30 years like that.
Yeah,
it feels like yes, AI is actually in line with what they think they're trying to do. It's just what they think they're trying to do is going to not make anything good, like good enough to actually like propel the entertainment and like the art that like drives culture forward into the future.
And they're just killing something that is innately human about like wanting to create and to be creative. Like, because the way these studios and executives look at the nature of creativity is like, it's the same way a senator would look at what they're going to read if they're trying to filibuster. It's like, man, just say shit. Just say words. All you got to do.
It doesn't matter.
Just read from the phone book. And that's enough to tick the box.
It's just as good.
Right. And think of how uninteresting what happens when you shift gears to, well, just read from the phone book. The most entertaining thing might be when they don't know how to pronounce a certain name. And that's like the height of like fucking entertainment or whatever, because more and more it's just looked at, well, we just need to hear words and visuals be put out there for people to stare at. Creativity is and like a non-issue. And I think that's really a violent part like about it, is that we're taking that sort of ability for a human being to pursue something like that, to have an imagination and to be able to sustain their life with it, just because it's not even possible.
But like even in your example, right, like stumbling over a word is something only a fucking human could do.
Right.
But then also it's like this, like they're the myths that got built around, like Netflix, the myth that they're built on is like, we had an algorithm that told us that people like Kevin Spacey and political drama, and therefore we greenlit House of Cards, and look, like the computer did that. No human could do that, which like ignores their, like the things that don't work. It ignores the things that haven't worked that have been algorithm driven. Mm-hmm. And also it's like this such a funny thing. It's like, you know what put Amazon streaming on the map? Fucking Transparent, which by the way,
right,
not one computer at any point ever was like, do you know what we need now?
Right.
Like,
right,
you know, this story, Transparent. So like they're working from just like this law of tiny numbers. I mean, that was my other experience. Wow, this is maybe talking out of school, but I think this is a common enough experience, which is like, we had a moment in 90s show where they were insistent. Okay, I guess I just won't say exactly what the thing they were insisting on, but they had a note for our opening credit sequence that was basically like, the algorithm says you have to do this or else no one will watch it. And when I tell you, it was an utterly, utterly, utterly inconsequential note from a creative perspective, it was just like technically going to be very difficult to do. And they're like, our data shows that this has to be this way. And like, having worked on the network side of entertainment before and worked with executives and watched our research department routinely lie to them, like essentially, or obfuscate with statistics, and having taken a little bit of statistics in my life, I'm like, you don't have enough data to know. Like, right. you simply, like, this niggling tiny thing that doesn't really make any difference, like, you're insistent on it because your legitimately statistically insignificant data tells you one thing, but it doesn't. The reality is it doesn't matter. And the fact that you are killing multiple executives and a high-priced showrunner's day arguing about this is like flushing money down the toilet.
Yeah.
Because you worship an algorithm, but you also don't have the statistics knowledge to like actually say this is inconsequential. They had an inconsequential fight all day. Because I'm like, you haven't produced that many show opens before.
Right.
So you don't know, you just don't have a data set that tells you like whether this creative choice or this creative choice makes the most difference in this thing. And again, cannot stress enough, it did not make a difference.
Mm.
Right.
Like, yeah.
I bet that executive was like, see those hits, see those numbers? That's
it's because of the intro.
Yeah.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show. If you like the show, means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.